Welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway. Now then, energy isn't just a commodity we consume. It's a landscape that we have to navigate with precision. And whilst many are still dashing around trying to understand their ever-growing bills, the real winners are those treating energy as a strategic asset. We're at a point where having the right intelligence is the difference between an expensive guess and a real energy win. And joining me now is a man who was one of the inaugural 12 Crackers of Christmas Awards for his contribution to battery and energy innovation. Michael specializes in energy intelligence. He helps businesses stop reacting to the market and to start mastering it. And we're here to talk about those wins, the true potential of a well-designed energy strategy. Michael Kent of Palmer Energy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Now then, you're a busy boy, I should think.
Yeah, just a bit. It's been a busy year so far, but very, very interesting stuff going on. And can't complain.
Yeah, let's pick up right at the get-go around this current energy market. And it's being obviously significantly impacted by global politics and unrest with Russia and the Middle East, bearing the brunt of the responsibility for this, we think. What's your sense of the short and medium term future for energy and specifically energy for business?
Yeah, so volatility can sometimes lead to uncertainty for customers, let's say. So sometimes it means they stand still. Where we operate is particularly obviously on the electricity side of things. And some of the things that are emerging downstream are elements such as distribution transmission charges, linked to electrification, essentially. So a lot of the work that we're doing at the moment, particularly with C&I customers and a fair bit in EV, I have to say, is how they can alleviate those increased costs. So for example, Duos to Nuos, etc. So ultimately, the advice and the guidance that we're giving these businesses and these partners at the moment is to have a longer term view on their strategy. And that's not just from a commodity perspective, you know, not just a contract with their supplier, that's having a view on the other elements that go within their bills and what sort of strategies they can be taking to reduce that cost over time. Or, you know, I'm sure we'll come on to it, navigate around grid constraints and elements like that. So whilst there's global unrest back at home, there's a lot of elements going on which is going to have a big impact in terms of how particularly EV operators may operate in the future, both from a public charging perspective but also from a fleet perspective too.
And of course, cost is one of those things which is a key factor in whether people make the transition to electric vehicles. And for businesses, any uncertainty around energy markets, whether it be oil and petrol and diesel prices or electricity prices, can have a massive impact on the vehicle market. Are we yet seeing any changes, do you think, in energy usage, or is it too soon?
It's really interesting. I'll take fleet as an example, fleet electrification. There's a number of customers now who have been involved in electrification for a number of years in terms of replacing ICE vehicles with electric. And they're getting more and more advanced in terms of understanding that they see that energy as an opportunity, not as a threat. So there's a different number of layers which are going into these business models now. It's not just about the vehicle, the charger, the grid connection. It's the optimization and buying of that energy, i.e. when, how. And in my previous role, I was involved in the flexibility markets as well. It's all of those ingredients which go into building a roadmap and building a business case in terms of what is the right thing to be doing with the transition. So what we see with the early adopters, they're focused on the vehicle, the power, the charger, the software. They haven't necessarily caught up with how they might buy and trade that electricity in the future. So it's really, really interesting in terms of when you talk to different customers from a fleet perspective. But the opportunity is huge in my view.
We'll unpick the opportunities in a minute because I want to focus on some of the positives rather than the scary headlines. I'm really interested in Palmer Energy. Tell me a little bit about the services that Palmer Energy offer. You're the MD, so you're the man who's in the chair. What do you do?
Yep. So we essentially design and manufacture battery energy storage systems. It was set up by Andy Palmer, who brought the Nissan Leaf to the market back in the day.
Dr. Andy Palmer, we know him well.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So essentially that the Palmer Energy side has been going for about 3 years now, focused on containerized solutions for C&I customers all the way to grid scale battery assets. Middle of last year, we attracted investment from First Group, obviously a transport operator, Barclays, and we already had Legal and General and Oxford University on the board within a company that acquired called Brill Power, based out of Oxford. So Brill Power, a spin-off from Oxford University. So essentially what we're trying to do is design and manufacture systems which got the best cells, the best PCS, but with a UK slant on R&D, testing, software, so from a BMS and an EMS perspective, along with ongoing aftercare. So that's the sort of overview of the company. And our products is to sell those to, you know, end users who are looking to reduce costs, as I was alluding to before, generate revenue in some cases in those flexibility markets and wholesale markets, or solve problems such as grid connections and so on and so forth. So very high level view there of what we're up to.
And in terms of the solutions that you bring to market, are there different sizes of battery storage systems that you can put in? Explain a little bit about that for us.
Yeah, so they range from you know, small C&I units, 156 kilowatt hours to be precise, which is a small cabinet, essentially. In some cases, you might put one, two or three of those on a particular site. And in other scenarios, you've got the 20-foot containers, which are, you know, housed. So for some of our fleet depots, they've got the 20-foot containers, but in other depots, they've got the cabinet solutions. And really what that comes down to is the energy load on site, so the electricity load, the balance between the CapEx, the install, and then the savings and the revenue, and bringing the two together essentially to, you know, to provide that to the end user. So whole range of different sectors that we're involved with.
And am I right in thinking that you're able to charge these standalone units using a relatively small energy supply because they're constantly topping up from the grid, but not with a massive cable and huge availability of energy, but they can just trickle charge it in more or less, keep the batteries topped up, which can then be hooked up to chargers and dispense it at rates that we need for commercial operation?
Correct. Yeah. So in some cases, it depends, but the strategy for a grid constrained site is to charge the battery up generally overnight, because that's when the levels of charging have dropped, particularly on a public charging site in the main, and then basically dispense the battery to the EV charging at times where it's required. So the way that we do that is we integrate with the CPO's charger management system as well. So the Brill Power technology talks to that system back and forth, so it can actually see what's going on in terms of the total amount of chargers versus the maximum import. And then the battery can kick in then to say, hey, let's send some power from the battery into those chargers so customers can, you know, benefit and ensure their charging experience is a positive one.
Is grid constraint, and we talked about this a little earlier, we touched on it, grid constraint being a fleet can't access energy in the national grid at the scale it needs to at the site that it's currently at, is that the big opportunity for you in the UK, or is there something else which you're really focused on?
It's one of the opportunities, particularly in the EV market. For Palmer at the moment, obviously with our background, a lot of the people in the business are from a mobility background. So we're supporting a number of customers with new sites that are coming on stream. Or they want to get on stream, and you know, for example, you know, they might only have a 250 kVA import which they can get. So we support them with sizing a battery system based on their expected utilization by year and so on and so forth. But really, in terms of the battery energy storage business, you can take that to a number of different places. And quite interesting is when you talk to a cold store customer, let's say, or you talk to a glass manufacturer, or you talk to a car dealership, they all have EV at the forefront of their minds as well. So they might not have done much electrification, but then the power element of their site location comes into play as well. And then you can even go as far as deep as moving to electric heating and what that might do to their building. So yeah. So essentially the grid constraint piece is emerging over the last, I've been involved with this now for a number of years. Over the last 12 months, it's really picked up pace in customers saying, how can we get around the problems of a congested grid to particularly to open up a new EV hub or one of those elements that I've mentioned there.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcar. Search Europcar Business.
Michael, I guess that there are renewable sources that you can also plug into the batteries. It's not just about being able to get a grid connection, but turbines and solar powers and so on. And you manage the whole shooting match through this battery energy system. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So in some cases, we're gaining the excess solar. So rather than solar be exported back to grid, for example, that might be better to sponge into a battery and then, you know, discharge the battery later on. That reduces them pulling from grid even further. And the balance between the export rate and the import rate is generally better to do it that way. But yeah, we take in sources from wind as well. So a battery can capture any of those assets in relation to the other generation on site and then what it can do from a discharge perspective against that site load.
We spoke about just a minute ago big energy users who they've got to have a strategy, otherwise they won't be in business. Do you find that you work almost exclusively with those big energy users, or are you finding now that the market is opening up and those down the size scale, if you like, smaller businesses, are beginning to wake up and say, we've really got to get on top of this strategic issue to manage our assets positively?
A short answer is the majority of people that we talk to from a large scale customer, a larger business, they've generally got experts in there from an energy manager point of view, supporting whether it be net zero, sustainability, cost, purchasing, etc. They generally have a handle on it. But sometimes their skill set is only in one area. So it might not generally be in EV, or it might not generally be in renewables. So you're generally doing a bit of hand-holding from that side of things. But more and more urgency, if you like, or more and more attention is being placed on the small to medium businesses as well. You know, even if it's, you know, I'm just picking a number here, even if it's £5,000 a year increase, that's a lot of money for a small to medium businesses in some cases. So there's a lot more attention coming on how they can alleviate more so cost in those types of business. They generally won't be as big in terms of their net zero strategy, sustainability, as I mentioned, but it was certainly on the radar more and more. And an interesting conversation, to use an example, the other day I was on with a large customer, and their investment director said, for the first time I've worked here in 15 years at board level, energy purchasing slash sustainability, not sustainability, but energy purchasing was on the board agenda for the first time. and we had the right people from internally in the business in the room to talk about that. But then obviously at board level, that has been discussed as well. So with any crisis or with any changes in terms of how we are, what type of energy mix we're using and where we're getting it from, it is raising it up on the radar with particularly with the larger corporates.
And I suppose having energy security now is one of the critical things that businesses are looking to have because they need to maintain their operation. And I was seeing that, was it Sri Lanka, are now planning to shut down businesses on a Wednesday to save fuel because they're worried about the provision of oil as a fuel. And you're beginning to see that there's a massive commercial impact if you don't think about energy as one of the assets that you have for your business.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And with electrification, I think that actually would give more resilience to customers in the future, i.e., you know, there's a lot of things you can do with electricity to ensure that your supply is constant. Even if you can't get that grid connection in the future, there's different things around grid balancing, flexibility markets that I was mentioning before, which almost gives you a bit more security. Yes, it could be perceived that, well, it's going to cost me more, but going back to the example I was using before about the different ingredients which go into it, that's the critical thing for, I guess, the bean counters of the business who are looking at the transition in the future. So in Elements, reliant on oil is probably not the way to go in the future. And you know, look, the sooner you look at this, the better.
They say that necessity is the mother of invention. And I wonder where you find genuine innovation when you're out and about and talking to customers. Have you seen really clever stuff, clever ways that people are managing their energy? And you as an expert have gone, I hadn't expected that.
From an EV perspective, going back to my fleet customers, as I said, they've become more and more sophisticated with the way that they do things and the way that they might purchase their energy, let's say. So block buy-in, day ahead markets, so on and so forth, using an optimization strategy to say charge there, discharge there. That's because the price has gone up in the wholesale market. So if I do that, then I can benefit from that. More and more focus on renewable assets now, as I mentioned, with certain customers. So ultimately saying, hey, I'm paying for a 12 MVA connection, let's say. This is an example I saw the other day. If I did this with this type of technology, I would become more self-sufficient with wind, solar, battery, and I could actually reduce my MVA / KVA on my grid connection, which would reduce my cost further. So a lot of the elements I see are more geared around being more sophisticated around A, what they need, B, how they buy, and see how they optimize in real time. They're the elements where we're seeing a lot more innovation come through with, you know, new players in the market as well, which are doing wonderful things and helping, particularly on an EV and fleet operator perspective, optimize their use, which then becomes more impactful from a transition point of view from diesel to electric.
Yeah. We have a huge audience of people who are on that transition from internal combustion engine to EV, and they'll be at various stages of their journey. If there's somebody out there who's listening to this and wonders, how on earth do I start to consider the right things to do moving forward? What are the first few steps that you can take to move from, I don't have my own energy supply, I rely on, let's say, retail and retail charging, and suddenly they've got an opportunity to think about depot charging and renewables and battery electric storage. Where on earth do they start?
Where we start for is from the battery side and then linking in the renewables, as I said. And for me, it's all about partnerships in this space. We don't specialise in some of the fleet modelling elements that some really, really good companies out there do. So it depends where the customer is, I would say. But essentially, if there's an element, if I was brought a customer or I had a customer which was looking at a different number of topics across the ecosystem, I would be saying, well, we can specialize in the energy / renewable / how that would look from a load and a demand / optimization perspective. But then if it's fleet modeling and it's vehicle modeling, I'd want to bring in a partner there. That's the only way to really give the customer the best view of what they need to do and different parts in the roadmap over, okay, well, you need to do this first. Because it could be down at the level of applying for a new grid connection or looking at, you know, what vehicle is best for their operation. So that would be my advice, really, is... If somebody's leading from a customer perspective and there's a number of different buckets, as I call them, across that customer's ecosystem, use partners and use different partners in the ecosystem to help support that customer on their way to electrification. It won't work without it, in my opinion.
No, agree. Collaboration's everything. We can all help just a little bit in moving forward. And it is those small steps that lead to giant strides and ultimately change. You mentioned Andy Palmer, Dr. Andy Palmer, who, for those who don't know, he was responsible for launching the Nissan Leaf and is an absolute legend in our industry. Go look him up. But I tell you what, he's a hard taskmaster. How have you found working with Andy Palmer?
Honestly, it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Andy's inspirational. He's visionary. He doesn't admit to knowing everything, so there's no ego in the room, but he's ambitious and he's driven at the same time. So for me personally, he leaves me to my role with enough, you know, back and forth in terms of what's going on with the business and my area of the business. And I've really enjoyed working with Andy so far. So can't praise him enough. And I'm not just being paid to say that. That is genuine.
It's a bit like when people say, you know, I've worked with Steve Jobs. For me, it's, you know, Steve Jobs was a highly driven, very clever, challenging human being who pushed the boundaries. And I think Andy is very similar. He's got a wonderful side to him and a really warm personality, but when there's a job to do, he's going to make sure it's done.
Yeah. And the changes since I've joined Palmer in December of last year, you know, the business is progressing forward at a rate of knots, but at the rate of knots in a good way, in terms of, you know, different developments and different potential products and looking at our technology and innovation roadmap. So it's really exciting for me. And you know, I've really enjoyed working for him so far, and he is an inspiration. So, long may it continue, and onwards and upwards, hopefully, for the success of Palmer and Brill Power.
One of the things that I've seen often in very senior managers is that they have a constant hunger for learning, and that every single day there's a new lesson. What are the things that you've picked up in the time that you've been in Palmer Energy that have been transformational for you?
I think it's more on the Brill Power side, which I've picked up a lot of insights and knowledge, and to be fair, much cleverer people than me on certain elements. It's really the depth and the insights and the detail into what goes into managing these batteries. The whole point of the business in terms of Brill Power, which was part of the strategic investment, is to manage cells and modules to their best advantage, both prolonging life and reducing degradation. And I've been blown away, really, by what they do and how they do it and the benefits for the end customer. And, you know, one of the things that we've done a lot of over the last few months is bring our partners and customers into Oxford so they can see it for real. They can feel and touch, not specifically touch the electrics and the electronics, but they can see it, and we can walk them through in terms of what we do on a day-to-day basis. So I think the takeaway is learning a lot more in terms of how they do that side of things, which has got a benefit for our end users. And essentially, going back to the bean counter scenario in the business case, it actually helps business cases in the long run in terms of why is this an investable asset for me as a customer.
Talk to us about one of your customers, somewhere where that you've gone in and you've started from scratch and you've had to build a system and give them that strategy and help them to deliver an off-grid solution. Who are you working with?
I can't say the name because it's government related. But we're working with a customer at the moment on a more or less off-grid solution. There's a small supply going in there, and that's integrating solar, wind. Unfortunately, there is a diesel gen set on that, but you know, we'll swerve over that one. But it's required at this point, and that's basically to build up what they want to do within that site. And I can't say it specifically what the site is, and ultimately working out the heartbeat of the battery against all of that different technology. So essentially the elements that go into that are quite detailed. Number one, looking at that energy demand for the sites. Number two, looking at the grid connection and the constraints that sit behind it. Number three, and this is where the partnerships and collaboration comes in. We're working with a national partner on that one in terms of the installation and the site layout. So single line diagram design, site layouts, so on and so forth. And then ultimately wrapping in the strategy in terms of the system sizes from a renewable asset point of view, battery asset point of view. And then the end piece is how that would all be brought together for a site optimization, when it goes live, essentially. So a site optimization strategy. So that site's due to go live soon, construction, installation. And then essentially the on-site strategy is to combine all of those assets in order for that customer to operate day to day, week to month, week to week, month to month, year to year. So that's just one example, but there's numerous examples out there in terms of what are the key thing I always ask customers, if they're coming to us, is why do you need this? Why do you think you need it? And then we can work backwards from there in terms of what it is that they're trying to achieve. So in EV and fleet at the minute, like I mentioned, the two hot topics that we've got are grid constraints and cost reduction. They're the two top things I'm seeing where we sit in our play in this ecosystem.
How quickly can you move as a, let's say I'm a fleet manager with 500 vehicles and I want to move to a new site, doesn't have grid capacity, and I've got renewables that we can put in, and I want to go from zero to delivering a complete system. How long does that take?
So from a battery supply perspective, that's not that long. 3 to 5 months to land a battery. So not too bad at all. You're not talking 12, 18 months. Hopefully there's no DNOs here. But the key thing that we find is the engagement with the DNOs and the IDNO. So essentially, there's a lot of work pre-program that has to take place before you're on site and you're installing. We've done batteries in a week. We've installed them in a week to 2 weeks. But the pre-program, and I'm talking the C&I cabinets here, the smaller cabinets there, not grid scale stuff, before someone shoots me if they listen to it. it's the pre-planning with the DNO, it's the site design, it's the build up to the program. So you can land a battery fairly quickly. It's the bits that go before them, which are key. Ensuring that the G99, NG100 through the DNO is done correctly, building up your design program. on site can be very quick in some cases. You'd be surprised. Be surprised.
So are we looking at maybe a year, something like that, to get all of that done? Or is it how long is a piece of string?
Some. If it's an existing site, we've done a program in 3 to 4 months. If it's a brand new site, you could be looking from anywhere from 6 to 18 months, depending on what it is and the size and so on and so forth. It's quite vast, and the reason why I'm not giving you a solid answer in terms of timeline, every site is quite different. What we're dealing with, it can be a new grid connection for battery only, or it can be an existing grid connection with some renewables already there and we're looking to do. So it can be quite varied, but they're the ballpark numbers.
But I guess the secret is to start early, get in touch, find out.
If you're going for a new site and you need a new grid connection, exactly. So what is the available capacity? What do you think you need? If you ask for X, what will it cost? Or if you ask for Y, what will it cost? So in some cases, you might go lower, because then you could actually have a battery, which is going to be cheaper than a bigger, big grid connection in some cases. And that's a sort of level of sophistication, if I call it that, that we're starting to see from particularly public charging operators now, CPOs. We're starting to see them think a bit differently in terms of, well, if I go lower, it's going to cost me a bit less on that side, but I can increase my import by doing it this way. And you know this yourself, in the last few years, there has been a land grab in terms of available connections on good road networks, and it's diminishing, you know, it is diminishing. And anybody that's a nerd or, you know, loves this sort of stuff can have a look at the DNO heat maps to see where that is going in the future. It's out there, it's available. So earlier the better, but think about what you actually need, or is there a lower grid connection you could take with a different sort of renewable strategy on site?
Yeah. I'm fascinated by this whole connection to the grid DNO piece, and wondering what's your view on recent government action, which is trying to speed up the process for those who are trying to get a grid connection. Is the government doing enough to support grid connections, or don't you really care? Just take a battery. That's the best solution.
I'm not involved in the grid connection process from my side, but what I have seen with the grid connection reform, particularly on larger size connections, that has caused a lot of pain, particularly for the large scale developers. So you take the large scale grid batteries, a lot of them have had to put planning applications in. That was a prerequisite from the grid connection reform, and they've had to wait for offers coming through. So I was talking to one large front of the meter developer a couple of weeks ago. They had 5 in, they only got 2. And that's a huge, huge A, investment up front, but B, where do they then take that from a site development perspective in the future? I'm probably going back to collaboration here. If I was a developer on that, you might be looking at repurposing what you can do with that site. So, i.e., is there a lower grid connection you can take to repurpose it into something else? From an EV perspective, some of them could be quite interesting from an EV perspective. You don't need as large grid connection. And then the feedback I get from our ops team over here is it's very DNO specific. So for example, in one area, particularly with our world in batteries, if we want an export of over 200 kilowatts, it has to go through transmission impact assessment elements in some areas. And that's an 11-12k cost. And that's probably about 15% of the overall capex of the battery and the install in some cases. So it can be quite misbalanced depending on a regional basis. That's probably the biggest frustration I see from our team's perspective when it comes to the DNO side of things.
I'd love to sit and have a conversation privately with you about the DNOs, the good, the bad, and the ugly, but we won't go there today.
It's not me either. That's not the right thing. I'm not going to put his name on here as well, but I'll give you an introduction into, he's not going to like me for that.
You're a good man. Thank you. Now then, if you were the law for one day and you could make up the rules, with the power to fast-track one specific energy project or policy, what would you green light to give the UK the ultimate competitive edge?
Oh, that's a really good question. Really, really good question. I think it's a difficult one to answer because I would say where we sit right now, if I could wave a magic wand, grid reinforcements to be alleviated overnight would be a massive game changer in the UK space to help accelerate net zero, electrification, but restore some more resilience in the UK in terms of the certainty around the transition, because we're in this place at the moment where there's a dependency on one fuel mix. We're trying to become more dependent on renewables. But whilst that's happening, there's that bit in between, which is causing some issues going back to grid constraints and so on and so forth. So if I could wave my magic wand overnight, all the reinforcement works would be done. We've got the available capacity where we need it, and we can really accelerate the transition to a bigger electrified UK.
What do you reckon the view from 2050 will be like when we look back over, you know, the next 26 years? Do you think people will come to the conclusion that we were doing enough towards net zero right now? Or are we kind of dragging our heels a bit and we've got mixed messages from government and it's all a bit of a porridge?
I think right now it's a bit of a porridge. And I think if we fast forwarded, if we looked at 2050 and looked at 2026, the messaging can be quite, let's say, diluted or mixed. I absolutely wholeheartedly agree it's the right thing to do. I think the noise that comes from the press sometimes is around cost. And I'm going back to, I keep mentioning cost. I'm a commercial guy, right? So, but, you know, people, what we're trying to do with renewables is to ultimately become more self-sufficient, take away from fossil fuels, reduce carbon emissions, and so on and so forth. But if people only see the thing on, my cost is going up, my cost is going up, my cost is going up, that's what I see as the biggest look back in the future. And I hope that over time, with everything that we're trying to do as a nation, everything becomes easier from a purchasing perspective, from a policy perspective, and an operational perspective as well, to some of the elements I was talking about earlier.
You mentioned that you're a commercial guy, and it would be wrong of me not to ask you the most obvious question. If you have pricked and piqued somebody's interest and they want to find out more about you and about Palmer Energy, how do they do that?
Yep, you can reach out to us on LinkedIn. You know, or there's the website, which can be shared as part of this podcast. We're currently migrating Palmer Energy Technology and Brill Power, but they can reach out to us, you know, in a number of different ways, email, website, LinkedIn. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, it's been brilliant to talk to you and to just get a little bit below the surface of the business and how you run it and the opportunities that there are for Team GB and the UK. It's clear that whilst headlines focus on the friction in the marketplace, the real story is in the strategy. Energy isn't a problem to be solved. It's a system to be mastered. And if you work with Michael and Palmer Energy and the people that they collaborate with, the only thing that's going to happen is put you in control and bring you success. Michael, you've been a superstar. Bless you. Again, congratulations for winning the award. I can see why you won the EV Cafe 12 Crackers a Christmas Award. Just keep doing what you're doing, my friend. And if we can be of any help at all, do reach out and send my kind regards to Dr. Andy Palmer.
Will do. Thank you very much. Thanks for the time.
It's a pleasure. Now then, if you want to find out more, find us on socials or wherever you get your podcasts. Join the EV Cafe next time for more. But now, bring on the dancing lobsters, because until next time, we're out of here. Bye!